We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the Southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. This show goes like from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I mean, all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the line from there to what we call, once again, Fort Benning. And then big old patches of North Georgia, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. And all that is just the radio. That's just you radio people. Thank you very much. And then there's all y'all out there in the whole wide world going to the World Wide Web. Places like X, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, and our website, rightsidemedia.org, and you live stream the show. You can look in right now and see the pretty blue shirt that I'm wearing. There you go, live streaming the show. And then you podcasters that catch it after the fact, listen, doesn't matter where you catch the show, we want you to know we appreciate it. We can see it, we can tell, we know the numbers, and it means the world to us that you do. So thank you very much for that. Lots of text already flowing in, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I got to tell you, JP, this morning I did send an email to Allison and Amy Beth. Mm-hmm. I asked if they got home in time to make sandwiches.
That was funny.
That may be a new viral joke moment. I don't know.
Yeah, they played it up. I think that's the right response.
That's the right response. What was it? What are they doing? Caleb with a K, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, Caleb with a K.
Caleb with a K. Text line, Dave from Capshaw sends me something. What you got, Dave from Capshaw? Babylon B, Hunter Biden tells dad he's going to need a new boat. Oh, that was the drug running boat that blew up.
That's good.
That is good. Jeff from Indiana says, Phil, I enjoyed your segment on Fox News. Thank you, brother. I think it's very good for promoting the show to more of the conservative audience, it's still not as much fun as watching you troll liberals on CNN. Listen, I've been watching. I was supposed to go to CNN this Thursday, and it got moved. So now I'm going the next week, I think. Anyway, bottom line is I'll be heading back up again soon. But they just, I mean,
they got the budget to cancel flights.
Yeah, hey, those plane tickets we just paid a lot of money for. Don't worry about those.
Yeah, just a drop in the bucket.
Maybe they can. Maybe they got points. They probably got points out the yang.
Oh, yeah.
Scott from Russellville says, Phil, thoroughly enjoyed your guest host yesterday until the last caller, even if I didn't get a sandwich.
Nice.
John from Huntsville says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Thank you, brother. He says, also, did you hear that Apple is having an event to unveil their new iPhone 17? I don't care. By the way, I thought yesterday was one of the most entertaining shows ever. Well, John. All right. So, John from Huntsville, I got to know, did you watch the Miss America competition?
Maybe he did.
John C. from Madison says, with judges and prosecutors having no cash bail, can they be sued? Especially the ones that let the murderer out that killed the Ukrainian woman. No, and here's the deal. Judges don't establish the policies of no cash bail. That's a legislation rule. At the very least, it's going to be a local ordinance, very likely a legislation from their state legislature. So what I'm saying is judges oftentimes go weaker than they have to in the liberal venues. But when it comes to things like cashless bail or, no minimum sentencing, those are usually things that are creatures of statute or ordinance that are done by the legislative bodies that govern the area. So, yeah, there's
that. Well, there has been a certain NGO. I can't remember the name of it, but an NGO has been identified that was pushing for that exact policy in that same county that he was
pushing for
out.
No cash bail.
Mm-hmm. And I could do more digging into it. But, yeah, I mean, somebody's got to be held accountable.
Well, I think one of his last crimes, because, he had a rap. We're talking about the guy in Charlotte.
Yes.
The guy who killed the young Ukrainian refugee woman on the public transport in Charlotte, which we'll dig into more here in a minute. But I had heard that one of his most recent crimes, he was out on just a few $100 bond. It's, like, ridiculous. Like, that's a nothing burger.
Yeah.
But cashless bail, and by the way, they will, I will say this, where judges do have flexibility is depending upon how the cashless bail situation is set up. If they say no cash bail for these kinds of crimes, then they're bound. If they say at the judge's discretion they can do cashless bail, then the judge may or may not have had to do it, and so there's that. John from Huntsville, by the way, just checked in and says, believe it or not, Phil, I missed out on the Miss America pageant. But if I'd known about it, he said I definitely would have watched.
I'm sure.
Richard from Madison says, outstanding monologue, Colonel. Thank you, sir. said, "You made mention of many of the beacons of light who did very famous things to show their light, but I will not forget the neighbor who mowed my grass for me when I was recovering from knee replacement surgery, or the many who brought meals while my wife recovered from cancer surgery. We don't need to change the whole world. We can make a difference and be a light in our little corner and allow it to grow. God bless you." Richard, that is spot on, brother. Give that man some applause. That was outstanding, and he's right. You may not be able to change the world, but you can impact your little sphere of it, right? I agree with that. John from Pike Road. Hello, John from Pike Road. He says, "Can any of these judges let this guy in Charlotte walk be held accountable, or do they have qualified immunity?" They're going to have qualified immunity unless it can be shown. Here's the thing. Every state has their version of what Alabama calls a JIC, a Judicial Inquiry Commission. That's the group that holds judges accountable. So judges are not likely to ever be sued. Very rare you could ever find that to happen. What you can do, though, is have a judicial ethics complaint if you can show clearly that the judge abused their discretion in such a way as to knowingly cause harm. And I don't mean like abuse their discretion in just ruling the way you didn't like. You know, that's different. You know, gave them 10 years instead of 12, you know, whatever. But if you have a judge like the one up in, where was that, Minnesota? Where was the judge who took the illegal alien out the back door of a courtroom to avoid ICE?
Hannah Dugan from Minnesota?
Absolutely. Absolutely. How do you remember that? Absolutely. That woman right now, I mean, so basically she abused her position. She violated the law herself. There was nothing about that she had discretion to do. And so she's been removed from the bench and she's facing charges.
It was actually Wisconsin, but still.
Yeah. Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You were still better on it than I was. So there's your entry to you, John Pike Road. Look, we're going to talk about this at great length, but I will tell you that right now, even as I speak, that the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of North Carolina, a guy named Russ Ferguson, is standing. I mean, so Charlotte's in his district. And the Trump administration is not playing around. The U.S. Attorney's offices usually deal with things that are federal law. But in the absence of a state intervention on something, the federal government can insert itself if it sees grounds to do so. And what you're seeing right now, I believe, is a press conference that's happening on Fox News, not being covered on CNN, but on Fox News, where the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of North Carolina is announcing that they are launching a federal investigation because they believe that there will wind up being clear evidence that locals were not going to do anything. You know, one of the things that makes me the maddest about this situation, too, was, I mean, there's so many angles to dissect on this story, is that apparently this happened a couple of weeks ago. Did you know that?
Yeah. So
I didn't know anything. I thought it happened like 2 days ago.
If it wasn't, and this is not an over-exaggeration, if it wasn't for Elon buying Musk. Twitter and
right.
X being the free beacon of media, really,
yes,
this story would have not been covered at all. Because
what the heck?
The AP didn't cover it. MSNBC didn't cover it. How convenient. You know, nobody covered it. And it wasn't until somebody on Twitter, you know, I may have lived in the area and saw that, you know, this video was released quietly and like, "Hey guys, have you heard about this?"
Yeah.
Everybody's like, "No."
Yeah.
A Ukrainian refugee was stabbed, you know, unprovoked on a public train and there's absolutely no coverage of it. It's amazing. And I think this shows just how much the tide has turned. That the narrative, the left can't control the narrative with their mainstream media anymore because places like X exist where stories like this are going to get out and they've lost control of the narrative. And I think it's a big sign that the tide is turning. Unfortunately, it takes, you know, a story like that to happen, unfortunately, like I said.
Yeah.
But I think we're now in an era where stuff like that can't just be put away. Like, oh, don't pay attention. Don't worry about that story.
But I'm gonna be honest with you, and I'll say this unabashedly. I really do believe that if this had been a young black girl or Hispanic girl stabbed by a white guy, we would have an entirely different press response. We'd have an entirely different socioeconomic, cultural, you know, demonstration going on, and the media would have been all over it.
Cities would be burning right now.
Exactly.
Like, there would be say her name protests. It would be an outrage. But now when the tables have turned, it's just a mentally ill guy. He had no rhyme or reason to do what he did. Leave him alone. This is not a racial issue. It's mighty convenient. But I do think they're losing the battle. I think most people have opened their eyes and be like, No, you can't just tell me not to work. Like, this is, my eyes aren't lying.
You can't even find an angle to help the guy. Yeah. And I don't mean I don't help the guy, but what I'm saying is she's sitting there with her back to him. And you can watch the video, and she did nothing provocative. She didn't even look at him and say hello.
Nope.
She didn't give him a weird look that may have offended him. She didn't comment on his skin color. She didn't do anything. She came in quietly and sat down, going home from work. And I will say this. This is, to me, first thing she did was get her phone out and put her head down on her phone.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, listen, I told my daughter when she left for college, you keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah.
If you're out in a public sphere, walking out of a Walmart at night, you know, you're going to the, you know, wherever down the sidewalk, you just keep your head. You can look at your text messages later. Don't be in a position of not seeing it coming because you're head down in that phone. And I hate that she was, because she's sitting literally just looking at her phone, and the guy stands up behind her, just stabs her in the neck.
Yeah.
And there's zero provocation.
She left a war scene in Ukraine, and her crime was thinking that she was safe enough in an American city to not have to have her head on a swivel like that.
That's exactly right. And we're going to take a break right now. We're going to unpack this in great detail, but it's part of a broader narrative. We're going to talk about crime busting. We're going to talk about why it's so important right now that this debate is happening around the nation. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, it's making common sense like a superpower. Hey, so I'm doing this section on crime busters. Let me frame the issue in a broad way, all right? First of all, I think it needs to be just reaffirmed that, in my opinion, providing for the common defense is not something that is just at the national level. When any mayor of any small town, when any councilman, when any judge, whether it be a municipal judge or a, you know, a local magistrate or a state circuit court judge or whatever, when a DA, when a U.S. attorney, when any of them are sworn into office, they swear, for the most part, the same oath. At the state level, they might add to, you know, support and defend the Constitution of the state of Alabama and of the United States of America. I swore that oath when I swore in as a state senator. I did. When you swear that oath, you are swearing to the things that are contained within those documents. And within those documents, you have a provision that says to provide for the common defense. Providing for the common defense to ensure domestic tranquility is a clear indication that you're not just there to make life easy for criminals. What you're doing is ensuring domestic tranquility, providing for the common defense. We're talking about law enforcement. We're talking about the order and discipline of society. We're talking about being a nation of laws. That is not just about armies fighting foreign countries. That is not just about securing our southern border. That's about making the streets of Birmingham, Alabama safe. That's about making the train system around Charlotte safe. That's about making the streets of Chicago safe. That's about the reasonable expectation that if you walk your dog in a park in Auburn, Alabama, you won't be murdered. Fox News picked up a story that just happened over the weekend. Horrible story out of Auburn, Alabama. A former Auburn University professor was killed while walking her dog on Saturday at a local park. So apparently, some repeat offender, a guy named Harold Rashad Dabney III, 26 years old, attacked a 59-year-old former veterinary professor at Auburn named Julie Schnuel, who was found dead in a wooded area of Kiesel Park in Auburn. She apparently had a regular routine of walking and her dog and jogging through Kiesel Park, and he murdered her Saturday, stole her red Ford F-150, and has now been caught. This happened right here. Statement from the university. She was a cherished educator, a mentor, and a colleague whose dedication to her students and passion for veterinary medicine left a lasting impact on Auburn. So that being said, you look at it and you realize, story from 1819 News, the man who was arrested, Harold Dabney III from Montgomery, had previous charges in Virginia. Really? Yes. Not his first run-in with the law. Jail records show Dabney was arrested in Virginia Beach, Virginia, charged with possession of a sawed-off shotgun, charged with two counts of... he's now charged with two counts of capital murder and one count of murder during a robbery and one count of murder during a kidnapping. According to court documents, Dabney's father was also no stranger to the law. He was arrested multiple times for crimes ranging from drug trafficking to robbery. All this to say, we're looking at a guy who had records in other places, who the system apparently allowed to keep moving around, and we now have a loved local citizen and professor at Auburn who died just walking her dog in a local park.
Yeah, it's not just blue cities. It can happen in Auburn, Alabama,
too. That's exactly right.
And it's so unfortunate. And if this story of the Ukrainian girl hadn't blown up literally like a day or two before, this Auburn story could very well be getting the same publicity nationwide. It's the same thing of a somebody not doing anything wrong, just simply walking their dog and just gets murdered for no reason. It's the same. The girl just walking on the train, sitting down, not doing anything wrong, just murdered for no reason.
And I will say, too, that while she was murdered in Auburn, he came from Montgomery, which is a blue city, and his prior crimes were in Virginia, which is a purple state.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look. Right now, I did a piece this morning on my social media. I do it every morning. I do one I call the Thoughts in the Morning Drive, where I pick a topic and I spend about a minute and a half unpacking a topic real quick while I'm driving, and I post my thoughts. And this morning, I posted it on the fact that I believe that Democrats are walking into what I call a Trump trap right now. They are. They're walking into a Trump trap. There is nothing they can say or do that benefits their position on crime, because Democrats are notoriously weak on crime. They are. They're weak on sentencing. They're weak on bail. They're weak on prosecution. They're weak on defunding the police. And they're weak on the results that come, therefore, in those cities that have the high crime rates but have blue leadership. So that being said, I'm looking at this entire situation right now, and I'm saying sooner or later, Democrats have got to recognize, you would think, that they've walked into a Trump trap. The very fact that the Trump administration right now is going so zealously and affirmatively after the issue of crime in American cities is putting the Democrats on their heels. You know why? Because number one, either A, they have to accept his help, which is like saying, I can't do it without you, and they hate that, B, is it one or two, or is it A or B?
Either way.
B.
2A, okay, 2B.
It's B. So B, the next thing is they wind up having Trump come into their city, and they have to resist, because it's Trump, which makes them look like they are favoring the idea of keeping crime rates where they are. Or C, he comes in, he actually gets something done, which is B and C can go together. He actually gets something done, crime rate goes down, and it makes them look feckless because he quickly proves, you know what? You didn't need, new laws. You needed a new leader. And I came in and I fixed it. Look at the crime rate going down in Washington, D.C. There is no denying that he has made a difference by taking swift and assured action. Now, how you do that matters. He's got to work within the parameters of the law. But being a crime buster right now, listen, he's fixing the southern border. He's fixing economic issues. He's fixing foreign affairs. Why not? Apparently, he can do more. And he's working right now to be a crime buster in the United States. And I'll tell you more about some of the whys and wherefores when we get back. Y'all stay tuned. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Taco Tuesday. I cannot believe we're already through hour number one. I don't even know where it went. Who took it? What happened to it? It's gone.
Don't know. Magic trick.
I got Brian from Decatur checking in on the text lines. He says, if you place all the Democrats in America on an island vacation, violent crime rate in this country would drop 90 to 95%. We're sending them all to the Dominican Republic for an all-inclusive opportunity.
It's sad, but it's true.
There you go. So I'm in this number one of the triple dipper, crime busters. Right now, the screen, CNN is ignoring it. But And CNN's talking about whether or not the White House got the jobs numbers right. Meanwhile, on the right side of my screens, I'm watching high-profile cases with repeat offenders being talked about on Fox News. I've got a piece here from the Populist Times. I hold it in my calloused former paratrooper hands. Populist Times, Dateline yesterday. Another weekend of deadly shootings swept across Chicago, leaving at least 5 people dead, 10 others wounded by Sunday afternoon. Listen, hear me when I say this. I was in Baghdad in 04 during the Shia uprising. It was the early stages of the war. The Mahdi militia was blowing stuff up on a regular basis. We didn't have 5 people die and 10 others wounded in a weekend. That was a war zone. And we weren't losing that many on a regular basis. You're watching right now as one of the greatest cities in the world, Chicago, the city of the big shoulders, the Windy City, right here, had literally had so many shootings. That's not, I think there were 46 shootings, if I'm not mistaken. 5 people dead, 10 wounded in one weekend in Chicago. This is last weekend. And this is after all the discussion about crime. It's not like, hey, oh, that thing that we started talking about, this is what happened last year. Now that we're talking about it, it's getting better. No. They're talking about it now, and it's happening anyway. Authorities report shootings began late Friday night, continued into Sunday morning, with incidents spread across multiple neighborhoods. Victims range in age from 15 to 44 years old. And this goes on from there. Last weekend, oh my God, how about this? The shootings followed 2 previous weekends of high casualties in Chicago. Get this one, you ready? Last weekend, weekend before last, 58 people were shot in Chicago in one weekend. 58, 8 killed. The weekend before that, 6 were killed, 27 were wounded. Y'all, in 3 weekends, let's do the math here. Hang on, what do we got? Do the math. Oh my gosh, math's awful. 58 people shot, plus another 46 people shot. We're at 100 and, where are we, at 102-ish? No, 104. And then we got, where's the other one? 27. So
131.
131 wounded. And then go 6 plus, where'd the other one go? I'm trying to find my numbers. I'm just looking for them. 6 plus 5 plus, where's my third weekend? I'm trying to find my third weekend. 7. What do you got?
6 plus 5 plus 7?
Yep.
18.
18. 18 killed in 3 weekends. That's unconscionable. That's war zone stuff. That's in one city.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I actually was just about to mention this, but Jay from Lecktown just texted in about it. Have you seen the videos of the Chicago guys daring Trump to send the National Guard and said that you don't know what you go? We'll fight back. Trump doesn't know what he's dealing with, and it's like
I've seen big dude saying that. He needs to wipe the Twinkie off his fingers and get a hard life. Exactly. I mean, the guy doesn't know anything.
And so somebody did a stitch to that and goes, you're talking about the U.S. military, okay? I don't think you know what you're messing with. But that is the state of being in Chicago, where these gangs are so empowered, they feel like they can literally take on the U.S. military. And it part of me is just like, send them in. Send them in and let them find out.
Oh, how about this one? Fox News story yesterday. This is huge. And it's not getting much press right now. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, did a huge swoop across New England, like all across New England. Sinaloa cartel was the target. They made 600 arrests in one night. 600 arrests. They took in 171 different suspects, made a total of 600 arrests. They announced that they've arrested a total of 617 people total, actually, with ties to the cartel across 23 field divisions. They seized, in one night, 480 kilograms of fentanyl, 2,200 kilograms of meth, 7,400 kilograms of cocaine, 16.5 kilograms of heroin, 714,000 counterfeit pills, 420 firearms, and $11 million in cash. You know what that also tells me? Is it wasn't hard to figure out where they were.
Yep.
I don't want to say that like I'm minimizing it, but what I'm saying is Trump's only been in office for, you know, what, 9 months? Eight.
Eight
that much?
Eight.
8 months? He's been in office 8 months. This investigation could have been going on the last 4 years, and they didn't do anything with it. But right now, what you're looking at is arrest totals were 64 in Connecticut, 49 in Massachusetts, 39 in New Hampshire, 11 in Maine, 10 in Rhode Island, 3 in Vermont. That is a highly coordinated effort by the DEA to go after the Sinaloa cartel and just wore them out in one night across New England. Now, what that's telling you, though, is Trump is absolutely 100% going after crime. He is sick to death of watching foreign policy be the only place where you think about conflict and doing stuff and trying to make people safe. He's sick to death of the idea that our streets are just being ravaged by whether it be local criminals or cartels or, you know, soft on crime policies. He's targeting all of it. So, yeah. And then there's this. He's now in Chicago. We talked about Chicago a minute ago, but here's, they're calling it Operation Midway Blitz. Have you seen that? DHS.
Oh, it's specifically targeting illegal immigrants.
Illegal immigrants, yep. President Trump's Department of Homeland Security has officially launched Operation Midway Blitz. So all the stuff about stay out of our city, we don't want you here, you can't come. They just went ahead and said pound sand and they came anyway. The Monday operation began, according to DHS, dedicated to the memory of Katie Abraham, who was killed in a hit-and-run crash by an illegal alien named Julio Cuco Bol. Never trust a hyphenated name.
Never.
Never trust a hyphenated name. ICE agents who have been quietly preparing in the city for over a week are now arresting illegal immigrants with criminal records. And it goes on to say that Operation Midway Blitz is what they're calling it. Trump said, we'd love to go to Chicago. We're waiting for a call for Chicago. They never got it, so they went anyway. Now, we're going to take a break here momentarily. When I get back from this break, though, I got to tell you, so Caroline Leavitt addressed this very thing today in a press conference at the White House. In the course of doing it, she didn't just talk about Chicago. She didn't just talk about Sinaloa cartel in New England. She didn't just talk about things like what happened in Charlotte. Y'all, she actually named Birmingham, Alabama, and Jackson, Mississippi. So we'll take a break right now. JP, we'll take that break. We'll come right back with Time to Play It. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, so I've got a sound clip here. JP, I'm going to be calling up audio-visual number one. If you're watching the live stream, you can actually see it. Am I correct on that video? Yeah, you can actually see it and hear it. But Caroline Leavitt, press secretary for the White House, today addressed the questions related to the Trump administration, you know, pressing down on the issue of crime-ridden blue cities. I won't go. It was too long to have the actual question up front. Am I summarizing correctly when I say that she was basically asked about the allegations that blue cities are where crime is often found, and she addressed it, and then also talking about the murder in Charlotte and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
All right. And this is her response. Take it away.
So first of all, I want to get to the premise of your question, Reagan, which is being pushed by Democrats, that there is crime in red states. Of course, there is crime in all states, but the crime in these cities is all in cities that are run by Democrats. If you look at the list of the top 20 high crime cities in the United States, every single one, with the exception of one in Louisiana, is run by a Democrat. And these Democrats have supported the same policies that I spoke about at the beginning of this briefing, like cashless bail. If you look at a red state, Mississippi, but a Democrat-run city in that state, Jackson, in 2019, Jackson, Mississippi, eliminated cash bail for virtually all misdemeanor cases. And while Jackson is not formally a sanctuary city, the state of Mississippi formally banned sanctuary cities, and this city has acted as a de facto sanctuary city for criminals and illegal aliens since 2017. Same thing, Birmingham, Alabama, a Democrat-run city in a red state. In 2017, the Birmingham City Council unanimously passed a resolution, quote, committing to establish sanctuary policies. So if you actually look at the facts from these Democrat-run cities, these are cities that are run by Democrats and by blue, by members of the Democrat Party. These are blue cities, and they have all supported these disastrous policies, which allow repeated career criminals back onto the streets to further commit acts of violence. And so to answer your question, yes, the president wants to work with anyone across this country who wants to end these horrible policies and to bring law and order to our streets. And I think that is proven by his tremendous cooperation with the mayor of Washington, D.C., and our nation's capital. And just look at the results of that. And I do have some updates for you on the D.C. crime.
Go ahead and stop me. Yeah, there you go. First of all, I don't miss Karine Jean-Pierre one bit.
Yeah, talk about an upgrade.
Yeah, good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, if you weren't watching it, let me just say this. In case you've not actually watched Caroline Leavitt in action, everything she said was without looking at notes.
Yep.
She was literally, she was going from memory and staring at the person who had asked the question the entire time. I mean, she was missing eye contact. You know, Karine Jean-Pierre, they used to nickname her the notebook because she stared at her notebook and she read things to people.
Professional gaslighter.
Yes, exactly. But what you just heard, though, is absolutely where we are. Democrats, I said earlier, have walked into what I call a Trump trap. They have no choice but to look bad at this point. A, they can resist the idea of Trump providing assistance on crime and calling them out on their crime policies, which makes them automatically look like they're favoring crime and criminals. B, they could accept the help because their crime-ridden cities need it, but that's an automatic admission on their part, and they hate this idea that they weren't getting it done without his help. C, they could just, you know, wait and Trump shows up, and oh gosh, he shows up, and we resisted the entire time, and then all of a sudden, he does make the crime stats go down, and then we look like we're feckless because it took him to do it, and oh, by the way, we didn't ask for help. We just stood idly by and belligerently it happened whether we don't have control. So basically, if Trump shows up and does the work, I say Trump, you know what I mean? If the federal government shows up and begins to assist and do big, you know, ICE raids and bring the National Guard to help quell riots and, you know, and do all the things that it takes to, you know, put law and order back in place in some of these blue cities, guess what? The blue can't help but look bad. And it's all because of themselves. They have walked into it, like with their mouths hanging wide open. Just staggered right in like zombies. Just wandered into it, and there they are. And they can't do a thing about it because it's a self-inflicted wound. But y'all, and I say this with all sincerity. Like, for instance, Birmingham. That's near and dear to my heart. I did a lot of my growing up in Birmingham and Jefferson County. I understand that they are the ones who keep voting in the leaders who are doing this. I do get that. I also want my Birmingham back. Because the streets of Inslee and Wylam in West Birmingham are no longer safe, and that's where I used to run barefoot as a kid at my granny's house, going to see my cousins, running around and just, you know, feeling free and having not a care in the world. And that's in my lifetime. Chicago, what a cool city. Parts of Chicago, you can't go out at night.
One of the best American cities, truly. It's
absolutely
awesome.
The history, the legacy. You want to go down to Wrigley Field, you want to do stuff, you want to go and see the shows, you want to walk down by the river. You know, New York City, I love New York City. And yet, and that was a bucket list. I took Charlene there. I had things that I carried in my wallet for 10 years with the hope that I would take her there one day, and I did finally. And then I look at it and think, what a loss right now.
And I mentioned earlier the videos of the gang members pretty much daring Trump to send in the National Guard. My gut reaction is send them in and let them find out. But then on the top, I just think about, I don't want those cities to turn into a war zone between the National Guard and gangs. But then it's like, what is the solution? Like What is the solution? Besides, I feel like something drastic like that just has to happen. It hurts me to say that, but it's like, what else can we do to tackle these out of control gangs in Chicago and Birmingham other than something drastically like that?
One of the things that has to happen is the media has to get honest.
Yeah.
And so this whole narrative about what happened with this young lady on the train in Charlotte, the idea that it was not getting reported until Elon Musk made sure it got kind of viral on X, is shameful. And then the idea that they're now downplaying it and pretending that this, you're trying to, all MAGA Republicans are trying to make it a race issue. Well, first of all, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's also a crime issue. And secondly, it's a crazy policies issue. And thirdly, fourthly, It's a she's dead issue.
Yeah. I mean, if that was their daughter, I guarantee you they wouldn't be talking about like it, no, like that.
They wouldn't. And so what's going to have to happen is the media is going to have to stop being so disingenuous. And you're going to have to see things like what happened in Charlotte needs to be allowed to be a part of the discourse. And that also needs to combine with the idea that, wait, did the crime stats in D.C. just go down? And
drastically.
They did.
Yeah.
And then, oh, by the way, illegal aliens, that's actually wrong. And cartels got arrested. Why don't we applaud? And if the media will pick up that narrative and run with it, and more people will look at it and go, I want that in my city. I tell you what, I've seen some very interesting interviews. Don Lemon goes out on the street.
I love that. Yeah.
And Don Lemon's getting worn out.
Mm-hmm.
He's going on the street going, would you want Trump to send the National Guard? Yeah. Oh, you would? That happens more than once now.
Yeah. And him like mocking the National Guard. He walked past some folks in the National Guard in uniform and kind of like mocking them. Like,
did he really?
You guys really think you need to be here? And they just, you know, ignored him, rightfully so. But he was like, do you guys think this is a bit of a drastic measure? Like, he's a chucklehead.
Don Lemon's never done anything hard in his life. No. Not once. Anyway, bottom line is we're going to move on to another topic here in a minute. But yeah, this is a huge deal. And I really do believe it's a narrative that has to be advanced. And this young lady does not need to be, I mean, I don't want to say she's a martyr. I hate it. But the reality is we do need to make sure she's not forgotten. And I do believe that if there is some good that can come out of this, which is hard to say, some good that can come out of it is that her life is not lost in the shuffle and she becomes a catalyst for making things better. Crime Busters, that's number one, Triple Dipper. We'll move to number two in a minute, Appeal to Heaven. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down some major ground across the Southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. This one, whew, I mean, goes like from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, or I'm talking about all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the line from there to call once again Fort Benning. Benning! Big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in too, just for good measure. And then, oh, by the way, that's just the radio. Then there's all y'all out there in the whole wide world going to the World Wide Web, dialing us in on the live stream every single day. Places like X, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, our website, rightsidemedia.org. And then, yeah, all you podcasters who catch it after the fact, listen, the bottom line is, I say it and I mean it every time. The reason why I do that whole little spiel there about where all the people are watching the show or just listening to it is because we can see it and we appreciate it. You guys are the reason why we do what we do. Thank you very, very much. Let me get a few texts and then I'll go to the phones. JT Lacey Springs says, the Chicago Corn Pops, when and if the National Guard arrives, will be the classic examples of shotgun mouth as they scurry to their mom's basement. I couldn't figure out what he was talking about, and then it dawned on me what he was saying.
A lot of them corn will, pop. Yeah. But then there's some that are stupid enough to actually try.
You know what? I would hope they wouldn't. But I can't imagine that they would find that as, like, that'll advance our cause.
Yeah.
I mean, which one of them's going to say, watch this. I'll show those boys in uniform what I got. How well do they think that's going to work? Because what it'll do is you talk about bringing the wrath down upon that part of the city. It'll happen.
I mean, their cause is just be as big and bad as possible, so they probably would.
Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, hey, Phil, you know what the day of Chicago is the scariest? Election day when all the dead Democrats rise up to vote. It's like the zombie apocalypse, he says. Tom with all the kids in Huntsville says, don't get me wrong, I love Chicago, but I won't go back. Okay. David in Taft, Tennessee sent me something on a YouTube channel, so I can't look at it right now. You can tell me what it is.
He was just saying that there is a woman in South Carolina who was also murdered in her sleep by multiple released offenders.
Oh, really? Recently? That's another one?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's awful. Let me go to the phones. Robert from Athens. Hey, Robert, how you doing?
How you doing, Phil?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. What's on your mind?
You explained the whole situation right at the start of the show. I mean, shoot, not your monologue, but I guess debate coming up. But, you know, there's no debate. Lawyer Phil, there's no debate. You break your oath to the Constitution of your state or the federal government, you're out. I mean, you're out in disgrace, too. And the next man in line steps up to change what's going on. And if they can't do it, the federal government can. That's the way that's supposed to work. Now, Rangerfield, what would you do? What would happen to you if you broke your oath in the military?
Oh, yeah. You'd be out on your ear, or maybe in Leavenworth.
Okay, yeah. Leavenworth should be, I guess. But, you know, the same applies to them. The same applies to judges. The same applies to any government high official, from the governor down, all the way to the cops on the street. And I tell you what, I ain't bending my back to a communist. It's the same way in New York. How's that boy going to, that communist going to swear to uphold the Constitution in America? They won't.
No, he won't. He won't. He'll take the oath, and it won't mean a thing to him.
That's what is making me so damn angry. And yes, I carry my weapon with me all the time. I either have it in a truck or on me. I usually put it in the windshield so it don't slide out on my feet. Getting old and wears into the bones.
Just don't take a sharp corner with the windows down. You might be looking for your Glock. But
no, I don't have one of those. It's a little heavier than that.
Well, I appreciate you, Robert. Thanks for the call, man, and stay in the fight, all right?
God bless America.
Thank you. There you go. I did see, by the way, Caleb from Moulton, who refers to himself as, hi, it's Karen Caleb with a K. He says, judges and other officials in these blue cities should somehow be able to be held liable for these horrific preventable murders. Yeah, and so I talked about that earlier. It probably won't be judges unless judges had discretion, which they then use to be soft. If the judges are operating without discretion, see, if the judges don't have minimum sentencing guidelines to work with because the legislature didn't pass it, then it won't be the judges per se. But if the judges could have sentenced heavier and they chose not to, or if the judges didn't have to do cashless bail and they chose to, then yeah, the judges... they should be out on their ear. Like Alabama, where we actually elect judges, they shouldn't be on the bench much longer. But the other piece of this is local officials at both the city and state level, the ones who actually pass laws and ordinances, they need to be held accountable if they're being soft on it. And then DAs, you know, DAs are allowed to have some measure of discretion too. Just because a crime was committed does not mean the DA has to bring the prosecution or does not have to bring it to the level that somebody else might want them to. A DA can do triage. A prosecutor can do triage on their caseload, and they can say, we're going to focus on this one, but not on that one. Or they can say, we're going to take a plea deal on this one, but we won't take the plea deal on this one. If you've got a prosecutor like some of these Soros-funded prosecutors who literally say out loud, I won't ever prosecute those kinds of crimes. Well, that's somebody who's got an agenda. They don't care about the rule of law, and they need to go. Absolutely need to go. A couple more quick ones. Jay from Legtown, he says, have y'all seen the video of the gangsters in Chicago? Yeah, that's what you're talking about. He said, because they have Glock switches, they think they can win against the U.S. military.
Yep.
Listen.
We got switches around here. Y'all know how to mess with switches.
We got switches. It's, you know, whatever. they don't have the discipline. They don't have the training. They don't have the... they don't have the chutzpah to actually get anything done like that.
But like I said, that just shows they've been so enabled and entitled. They think they can do whatever they want because nobody around them is checking them. You can't just threaten the National Guard. Like, are you crazy? Yeah. But that's what they think. So
yeah, it's nuts. By the way, text came in from John from Huntsville earlier. He says, I just want to say well done to JP for taking over first place in the football pickup group.
Yeah, I beat John last week, I believe. So
did
there you?
You
go. Yeah.
We didn't get to talk football yesterday. How'd you feel about the weekend?
It was primarily cupcake games across the board. There were interesting games. Florida lost to USF and the Swamp.
Yes, they did.
That was a bit crazy. But yeah, primarily it was a lot of, you know, not very exciting games.
And then you had spitting again.
You did in that game. They actually, on the last drive, helped Florida get down the field to kick a game-winning field goal. So it's USF. USF is not a team to mess with. USF is actually ranked 18 now this week. So
Auburn came in. I saw ranked 24 today.
24. Yep.
Yeah. So they're no longer an unranked team if you look at 25.
Yeah.
As opposed to top 20.
Yeah.
Bama's at what, 18? You said
19.
19.
So now Bama is behind USF. It's a sad day, but yeah.
But I did see. So Bama put up more points against. What was the stat? Was it it's a non-conference team, obviously.
Saban never touched 70 in his career at Alabama, so it looks like Kalen DeBoer came in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, he was going to run the score up and show people what they thought on social media.
Yeah,
but I did think too that it was one of those things where you can brag about that one, but I'm not sure you should brag about that one.
I mean, it at the very least, I just wanted to see some sort of fire and motivation from the players, which I think we saw. So who knows? Alabama's got Wisconsin this weekend, so it's a bit of a step up.
And Auburn's got, I can't remember. Who's Auburn got?
I actually can't remember either.
I can't either. I gave you that calendar, that schedule.
There it did. If I want to go to my office, I can refer to it. It looks like Auburn has got, I can't tell from this. Oh, South Alabama looks like.
Oh, my alma mater.
Yep.
South Alabama. Mm-hmm. All right. Little known fact, I played football at South Alabama.
Did you actually on the quad?
No, we had a club team. I mean, pads and all, but it was really like really really bad football. It was like, I'm pretty sure there were lots of high school teams that could have beaten us. But we played Mobile College and Marion Military Institute and other stuff like that, and I still have a few aches and pains to prove it.
Yeah, but
all right, hey, listen, we're gonna take a break momentarily, but let me tell you, when we come back from this one, I'm gonna switch gears entirely. All right, appeal to heaven. You remember the story about the flag? I talked about it last week in one of my monologues. The Appeal to Heaven flag is a part of our history. It's a white flag with a green with an evergreen tree in the middle of it, green evergreen tree in the middle of it, and the words, "An Appeal to Heaven," underneath. It was the very first ever naval jack flag. It was the flag of the Continental Navy when George Washington commissioned it, and it flew from our naval ships. It flew from our coastal batteries. It flew at several places, to include something I believe very, very similar to it, flew at the Battle of Bunker Hill. That flag, An Appeal to Heaven, sort of inspired this dipper, because yesterday, what else also inspired this dipper that I'm about to do, is that yesterday the President of the United States, President Trump, actually went to the Museum of the Bible, and he was there for a meeting with, if you didn't know he already had it, he has a what's called a faith-based commission. He literally established that, I'm sorry, it's a Religious Liberty Commission. He's tired of the idea, largely speaking, that Christians are being given second-rate treatment by the U.S. government. Grannies being arrested for praying in front of, you know, abortion clinics. Cake bakers who are not allowed to decide they don't want to support a gay wedding. A little group of nuns who are having to sue the government because they don't want to have to buy medical insurance that pays for, they have to pay an extra premium for abortion rights when they're nuns. And all these things, President Trump looked at it and he said, you know what, we're going to have a Religious Liberty Commission. And yesterday, he went to the Museum of the Bible and he actually called on the people of the nation to pray. I thought it was significant, and I got some thoughts on this. We'll come back. It'll be Dipper number 2, An Appeal to Heaven. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Man, just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. Yes, indeed. I'm about to move on to this next dipper, but there's so many things happening right now. I got to tell you, I'm looking at a story that I just saw. This popped up on Fox. A violent rampage. An elderly jewelry store owner was hospitalized after one of those smash and grabs robberies in San Jose. So San Jose, California, the state that, what's his name? Gavin Newsom says is safer than Alabama.
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom says all these things about other states, and yet you've got these massive like flash mob smash and grab robberies where they just run in and start grabbing stuff. Well, an 88-year-old jewelry shop owner had a stroke, and I'm watching the video, where this group of thugs came in, started tearing things up, grabbing jewelry out of the cases, knocked him to the ground. He had a stroke, and now he's in the hospital. That's just unreal. And then another thing I just saw a moment ago was that the feds have indeed, on that Charlotte stabbing of the young lady, the Ukrainian lady, the feds have now officially charged him. They're charging him with a federal crime. And I believe it's because the feds don't trust that this guy is going to see justice if they leave him to the state.
And why would they? He's been put out 14 times
already. That's exactly right.
So it's like, yeah. And he said in the press conference, too, that the only reason they're able to federally charge him is because it was on a public transit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're charging him with a count of committing an act causing death on a mass transport system. Attorney General Pam Bondi said the DOJ will seek the maximum penalty for Brown. saying that the August 22nd attack was a direct result of failed soft-on-crime policies. She has directed her U.S. attorney in the area to federally prosecute DeCarlos Brown Jr., a repeat violent offender with a history of violent crime for murder, and said, "We will seek the maximum penalty for this unforgivable act of violence. He will never again see the light of day as a free man." Wow. I mean, that's just game on right there. That's the federal government saying, state, you failed this young lady. By the way, you saw a story about the young lady a minute ago. Yeah,
so the federal district attorney for that area was doing a press conference earlier today and said that the U.S. government actually offered to send her body back to her family in Ukraine, and her family in Ukraine opted for her to be buried in the United States because she loved America so much. They thought it was more right for her to be buried here.
Wow.
And my initial gut reaction to that is we failed her because she fled the biggest war since World War II in Europe to come to the United States for safety, and she couldn't even hop on a public train without, you know, being killed. And it's so sad. But, you know, hopefully, like you said, that this can open the door to people realizing there's a serious problem, and even people on the left to realize this is a serious problem.
You know what else is a serious problem? You and I were talking about this off the air. If you watch the video, there were people in the train car.
Yeah.
And I don't know to the extent that they understood what had happened. I don't know. So I don't want to just judge them outright. But they did nothing.
Yeah.
And they knew something had happened, and they still did nothing. And the guy literally walked down through the center of all these people mumbling about how he got that white girl. I got me a white girl. While he's dripping blood. You see the blood dripping on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's a macabre scene. He's obviously out of his head. But this guy should not have been on the streets. But those people on that train, I don't want to blame them, but I will say this. When Daniel Penny in New York stopped a guy from harassing and perhaps trying to kill or maim people on a train, he was vilified as a criminal. And Alex and you know, what's his name? Bragg, the DA.
Alvin Bragg
put him on trial.
Yep.
And he had his life was made a hell for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, it's when the Alvin Braggs of the world ignore real crime and prosecute the Good Samaritans, it creates a situation where nobody wants to get involved because they don't want to be Daniel Penny.
Yep, exactly. The precedent was set. And I will say this situation was a bit different because the guy literally was just sitting there and then just decided to stand up and stab her. Yeah, like, he wasn't walking around saying, "I'm going to stab you." So, like, at least there's that. But
there was no preceding moment there.
Yeah, I think it was a minute and 18 seconds from the moment that she got stabbed to until she ended up passing away. On video of her sitting there with blood coming out of her neck, crying alone, and there was a woman next to her who literally stood up, looked at her crying, and just seemed kind of unbothered, like, whatever. And it's sad that she, you know, nobody even tried to, and I'm not saying anybody could have done anything in that minute and 18 seconds, but the fact that nobody did anything to comfort her or try to do something and just let the guy walk away with blood dripping down.
We can't be that society. We cannot be that society.
Yeah, but like I said, thankfully Daniel Penny was eventually proven innocent, but in the meantime, his life was made hell, like you said.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Daniel Penny is a bit cautious to be walking around certain areas by himself because of all the death threats he got. Like, people may be thinking, is it worth it to actually do something?
Wow.
Wow.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not going to kick off this dipper until we get back now because I've got, a minute and a half we go to the break? But let me get a few text lines real quick. Text lines, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Thomas Mathen says, "Colonel Great Dipper, number one, thanks." He said, "Also, I heard some something of you." He said, "I heard some what?"
Audios of you on Fox.
Of me on Fox.
Okay. We saw your Fox appearance, yeah.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I appreciate that too. Thanks, Thomas. I'll check out the text. Lewis from Trinity says, "I saw the video. It was more than a smash and grab. They backed up an SUV through the storefront window, and it all came crashing down. It was real planned." He said, "Saw all the cars pulling up behind it and rushing into the store. One of the thugs knocked the man down." I hadn't seen that part of the video. Good Lord. So they literally drove a truck through the window or a vehicle through the window? That's just sick. You look at it and think, it's just depraved. And there, and I'm watching the video as he gets knocked down. Luann from Huntsville sent us something. What is that? Something about the judge who released Carlos Brown?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
It says, I did see this story. So if I'm not mistaken, this particular story is the one that talks about, at one point, this murderer, DeCarlos Brown in Charlotte, North Carolina, they have a way up there for people who are not even practitioners of the law to become judges. And I don't understand that at all.
That's great.
I just feel like being a judge today.
It's
okay.
A recipe for success.
I got money for a campaign. Okay. Judge Teresa Stokes. And Teresa Stokes was the magistrate judge who released him on minimal bail, if anything. And she apparently gets basically a benefit from releasing people because then they go to a facility where she gets paid for them going there. It's like pay to play. It's ridiculous. All right, coming back, hour number three already. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.